Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Cal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s. But before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now.
Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're gonna ruin a whole bunch of shit, so welcome to the show. Alright, so before recording, there's not really any news going on, so mostly just the Warner Brothers shit and, like, you know, Amazon and all that stuff, and the Russos have a lot of money and nobody really fucking cares. So, I want to hit you with, so I've been reading a few things. I just finished book six of the Dark Tower series, Stephen King's, like kind of epic thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm going into the last book now. Ooh. It has taken me 2 years to read through these because I kind of read like at a snail's pace when I read novels, because I don't like to like rush through them. I like to read novels the way I watch TV shows.
I'm with you there. And with this, like this is like an epic series. Like this is like I can't even understand. I read this through when I started as a kid and threw it, like, you know, like literally in 98 I think it was like maybe 96, 97. I was like 17, 18. I read up into where it was. Okay. So can I ask, so far, what favorite book?
So I really enjoyed, Wolves of the Kala.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, did you go back and read Salem's Lot?
No, I've read Salem's Lot and it's fine, and like I knew enough to like remember most of like the important things. I don't know. I know everybody liked Salem's Lot so much. And I'm excited for, like, whatever the new adaptation is going to be. I remember reading it and just being like, I don't know. I just wasn't super impressed when I read it at the time. Maybe I would feel differently going back and reading it, but it just really didn't, like, I knew it was interconnected. I know everything's more or less interconnected. And so I was just like, okay, yeah, Father Callahan, like, it's all, you know, I remember enough to get me through. I really, really enjoyed it. I just finished Song of Susanna. I did not love it. I thought it was fine. It just feels like a bridge.
Spinning wheels.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
And especially
after Wolves of Kala, like, it's such a, like I equate it to like the Empire or the Two Towers of the Tower series, because it's just so good. Like he has a great plot he has a great base to stand it on. And I don't like Song of Susanna. Just feels like, all right, well, I don't know what to do after that. Like King does, and it's just kind of like he said, it's very much a bridge. Continuing on, I'm sorry. I was just curious, I have so many questions about this.
So I am in the minority of, like, I know so many people read The Gunslinger and were just, like, infatuated with it. Mm-hmm. I've tried to read The Gunslinger since I was in high school. So 25 years, and every single time I get, like, a chapter in and I'm like, I do not like this. Like, it is so convoluted, and like I don't like, there's no world building there. Like you're just in the middle of something. And so I had to literally power through the shortest book in the series. Just like, I mean, it probably took me 2 months to read that tiny ass novel, because every time I would read like his little mini chapters, I'll read like two of them and be like, okay, I'm putting it down, because I just was not at all interested. And then I read, finally finished it, got to drawing of the three, and I was just engrossed in that one. Like, I was so into drawing of the three. Like, Eddie Dean is such a, like, he is such a great King character. So yeah. I'm on the last leg of my journey, and I thought that the comic series that mm-hmm. Marvel did and was kind of completed by Gallery 13, I thought they were adaptations of the books. And going through some things online, I discovered that, oh no, there are like original stories in those comic series. So now, yes. I'm like, fuck. Now I have to get all of that. So I'm in the process of tracking those down. So but by the end of the year, I will have read through the main stuff of the Dark Tower series. So,
okay. All right. And that's great. Now, have you read some of the ephemera that he actually wrote? The Wind Through the Keyhole.
I did read that. I said, okay. I'm also in the minority that I did not like going into Roland's past. Like, when we find about Susan and him and his friends, like, going to that town and discovering mm-hmm. the plot, and like, I just it was fine, but I wasn't like super into it. I was way more into like the Midworld stuff and Blaine the Mono and like the really like batshit insane like stuff. That's what I got into. And when he pauses the story to like, now here's Roland's past, I was like, oh god, I'm not enjoying Roland's past.
Yeah, when I was a kid, when I read Wizard in Glass, yes. Do you know how mad I was? Like, like, could you imagine? Like, here's the thing, is that like there's only like, you know, like, like, he only, I mean, like, he took a break after, I think, oh, yes. Wizard of Glass.
So, in the version of Song of Susanna I have, there's excerpts from his diary in the back.
Yes.
And so, I read those, and, like, I knew there were long breaks, but, like, yeah, I mean, it's George R.R. Martin level. Like, there's a decade plus in between a couple of these books. So,
you know, there absolutely is. And it just, when you get what you want, like, I mean, like, it's just, I don't know, like, it was frustrating. But now looking back on it, it's like, okay, I understand did that. It's just, I hate when series do that. When they got mid-series, when there's a, like, a head of steam going, and they go, oh, we're going to talk about the past. Like, I don't give a shit. Yeah. You should have done this before. But the things was that, like, Martin, King, like, I love King, but he's a sloppy writer. And we know sloppy writer, like, as presence to his, like, 90% of his end, he can start a story. He can get you involved in it. He doesn't know how
endings,
to end it.
Man. So, yeah. Which is, I guess, part of why I guess like I'm worried about this last book is that like none of these other books have ended. They've just been like a step into the next thing. Like, maybe The Gunslinger has an ending, but really it's just like, oh, like we have this palaver and then I wake up and he's gone and like that's the end of the story. You know, it is what it is. But every other book does like it, I guess they're cliffhanger endings, but like, you know, you just, you're left like, it's just like, oh, okay, well, I'm done now, in the middle of a story. And so like spoilers, I guess, in case anybody is ever going to read them. Song of Susanna ends with one of the characters. She's been pregnant for the last, like, two books. And it's been building up to her giving birth. And it's way more complicated than I'm making it sound. But it literally ends with her going in, like, she's officially into labor and giving birth. Like, that's the ending. Like, you don't even get the payoff of, like, the child is here. Well, I mean, I guess you kind of do. But, like, nothing past that, you know? There's no, like, all the other characters are just left in limbo. Like, the only thing you know is that, like, oh, well, this one character just gave birth to a baby. And, like, you don't know where anybody else is. They're like, scattered through the universe, basically. And it's just like, what the fuck? Like, but the best thing in Song of Susanna was worth the whole book for Roland and Eddie meeting, like, King writing himself into the story.
Yes.
It's so good when that happens.
You don't think it's going to be good. You don't think it's going to be good, but when he does it, like, I had to stop for a second because it's kind of an emotional hit, especially, like, no pun intended, but, like, when you read it, you don't believe he's doing what he's doing, but he actually does it and he pulls it off. It's kind of great, right?
Yeah, and he doesn't... I admire that he doesn't pull any punches about himself and his choices, especially at the time.
Yes.
You know, he was an alcoholic. Yeah. He was a drug abuser. Like, there's no, like, there's no woe is me moments. There's no, like, well, you know, you'd understood if you went through what I, none of that. There's just, like, yeah, this dude's kind of a piece of shit, but, like, he's trying his best. Like, he doesn't really understand what he's doing. Like, he doesn't understand how effective he is in other people's lives, and, like, this is, like, the triggering moment of him understanding that. So it's been pretty interesting. I also finished, speaking of Stephen King, his son wrote an excellent series of graphic novels called Lock and Key. I finished the Netflix series this week, which I really, really liked. Like, it is a I don't want to say low key because that sounds like I'm making a pun. It is not the intense adaptation that it could have been. It is very, like, mostly family friendly. You know, there's nothing too horrific. It doesn't really get the intensity that the graphic novels have, but I also think it is a very good adaptation, like, kind of like Preacher. I know a lot of people didn't like Preacher, and we've talked about it, but I just think it's as good an adaptation as there could probably ever be.
That's very interesting. Read the first two editions, so I guess, like, the first two issues of Lock and Key, and saying that they went with more, like, I love the term, their trauma, like, a more friendly but still have the horrific elements is interesting. I have to ask, is, I remember if Joe Hill is involved with the production of it, or somebody else that's more of the creative behind it.
Carlton Cuse, I think, was the big creative force. He'd been trying to adapt it for a while, and finally got the money from Netflix. But to my knowledge, because I don't want to talk like we're friends, but Chris Ryall, who was the editor and not showrunner, but the man at IDW when they were publishing these books, I follow him in all manner and have had several interactions with him. Really, really nice dude. And very, very close with Joe Hill. And, like, from what I saw from what he put out, like, they were there in production. They were on set. They were, like, working with the writers. They were working with the directors. Like, they were involved in the process. It wasn't like they just you know, much like Neil Gaiman has been with this Sandman adaptation. Maybe not quite as involved, but they were definitely part of it. So I think that that's how it, like, it still captures, like, the spirit of the books, even if it's not as intense as some of that stuff is, and is deep. Like, those books get heavy into, like, mythology and, like, I mean, generational trauma is such a buzzword now, but really, it's about a lot of that, like, things that not just that their father or parents did that affected their lives now, but, like, going back generations through their family line. Of course, it dealing with supernatural stuff, but you know, it's a pretty good show. I don't know if it's binge worthy, but it's definitely, and it's like 28 episodes, I think, over 3 seasons. So it's not a huge commitment. And it definitely, if anybody, you know, is like, maybe I want to read it, watch the show. And if you like the show, then go definitely read the book. But, you know, some of that stuff is probably, some people might just balk at, like, the fan, like the head key. People might just balk at how, like, that's just ridiculous. A key that opens your head and lets you walk around inside your brain, you know.
At the same time, like, I don't know, like, it is a kind of ridiculous concept, but I mean, I'm predisposed because, I mean, I love Game and I love Sam, and that's the kind of stuff. Like, when I read it, it felt like the best kind of way to kind of, like, loudly kind of run the kind of same kind of massive, deep root fantasy world that, like, Gaiman created in Man, but could be completely different. And that's what I love the most whenever a native, like, somebody like Joe Hill, I love what does, because he never really kind of, he never straight, like, you know, we're in the part of like, you know, creativity in film where people don't even try to homage, just remake. They just remake and recycle shit. And, like, what I appreciate about Joe Hill, not just the key, but, like, his writing, is he knows that he's standing on the shoulders of his father, but he never lets that be an issue. And sometimes he leans really hard into it, but hard in the way that, like, it's never, it never feels like he's making a photocopy of his father's stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's never like, oh, fuck, he's just Stephen King Jr. No, Joe fucking Hill. Like, there's a reason why he took his mother name, you know, because he wanted to do it on his own. So when you read his stuff, it just feels like, it feels like King in the best, where it doesn't feel like an echo chamber. It feels more emotionally, it's like, oh, this guy was raised by Stephen King. You can tell, like, it's just the ephemeral. I'm a huge fan of Joe Hill and everything he does. So I
couldn't get into Nosferatu, or
it was a bold experiment. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody that takes on Dracula and tries to do a fangled thing, it's high risk, high reward. I mean, it's like right now talking, right? And out there in the universe, you know me. I mean, we've talked this at great length. Out there is a movie, Renfield, where Nicolas Cage plays Dracula. And I'm like, shit, when do I get to see that? Like, I want that. Though you and I both know that, like, that Nosferatu vampire trope can only go so far, right? Before it breaks. And yeah, most of the time it breaks.
I guess maybe I have a like an anti-vampire thing, because most vampire stories I'm just like, they just don't really talking about Salem's Lot. Like, I just, like, yeah, it's fine. Like, it's just nothing, like, earth-shattering.
How do you feel about that new adaptation of Interview with the Vampire that they're doing? I mean, were you even into like the whole, like, here's a bold, very vast question. Were you into Anne Rice second? Like, no. You remember, like, she was everywhere in the 90s. Like,
Ryan loved Anne Rice. He had a first edition of Interview with the Vampire. I just didn't get it, man. Like, I don't want to sound like bro-ish, but like, it just seemed so like, it just seemed more about like the romance of it all. And I just didn't care. Like, it wasn't crazy enough for me. Like, I needed something like a little more, skin crawly, I guess, you know, which is weird because I don't love horror movies, but
it was Chamber Room. It was very Jane Austen or like, you know, Bridgerton by way of vampires, but very LGBTQ friendly back in the day and stuff like that wasn't around. It is kind of I like that. I learned, like, my favorite thing about reading, let's just take a sidestep about, like, you know, your like moving pictures. One of the things that I love about moving pictures is that I learned stuff, even though Ryan has passed, I still learned so much about him and so many interesting tidbits through this. And it's like he was really into Interview Vampire and Anne Rice stuff. And like, that's just another shading of Ryan that I kind of like. You just kind of fall with this all over again. And you're just like, man, like, that's kind of great. I kind of love that. I was a fan, but it was kind of like this take it or leave it thing. It wasn't like hardcore fandom, right? Vampires in general, like, I always kind of equate them to, like, do you remember the Chris Kattan sketch on SNL? Azrael? I always think of that vampires. You know, it's like, there's no difference between Twilight and any of the core vampire stuff. Like, it presents with the except one, which is Catherine Bigelow. And that's something like, that's Necro. That's actual, like, action horror, kind of doing something with vampires he hadn't seen. We'll check out Locking Key. I'll add it to the list of ever-growing list of, like, things that I should take a look at, and because I do like my favorite kind of horror movie is like the It kind of horror, where it's kid horror, because you get the, what I loved so much about It, like when I read it as a kid and then I watched the original, the one with Tim Curry, was that it was like kids that you could relate to that weren't like these little mob kids that did everything, like, you know, they weren't 90210 kids, like, you know, like, I love 90210 kid, you know, loved the drama of it, but like, I could relate to the kids more than I could relate to 90210 kids. And horror films, or like horror films dealing with teens or preteen, are always great because it gives them excuse to like write kid way that they are, like, you know, shitty bullies that continue to bully. They don't, like, learn. There's no fucking, like, oh, just treat them with respect. Someone else is bullying them. No, they're fucking little bullies. Yeah. I kind of love that about, like, horror, that it's an excuse to actually, like, give kids a kind of come of respect when it comes to that. So I will definitely miss out.
I think it's worth the 25 hours or so investment. There?
I'm still here.
Okay. I dropped out for like 3 minutes.
Oh, shit. Okay. I mean, I heard you talk. What was the last thing that you heard me?
You started to ask me a question.
Oh, I was literally going to ask, like, what else have you been watching?
Watching just, a bunch of stuff, but Harley Quinn, anybody who's sleeping on that show, like, I know I keep talking about it, but, like, this week's episode was brilliant. I want to pitch a book to you. Have you heard of The Department of Truth?
Well, I have not.
Okay, so it's a comic book series. Okay. Written by this dude, James Tynion. And all of what I'm about to tell you happens in the first issue. And this is how I pitched it to a friend of ours, Spencer. Okay. All right. So you're this dude. You work for the FBI. Very low-key desk job. Like, you get tasked with monitoring basically internet chatter, the flat earth nut jobs. They're just like, this is your job, is just to monitor their stupid bullshit and make sure that it doesn't escalate to the point of like they're going to overthrow the government or like some dumb shit like that. So that's what you do every day. You go to work and you just log on to internet chat rooms or message boards or whatever and just see what they're talking about. And then, like, you get an invite to one of their flat earth parties. You're like, well, I gotta go, right? Like, you know, I scored myself, like, worked my way into this circle and got an invite to one of these parties. So I'm gonna go check it out. So you go to the flat earth party and you get pulled aside by some of these higher up people, like, you know, top like 1% wealthy people. And they pull you aside and tell you they know who you are. They know you work for the FBI. They know that you're investigating them and that you don't believe in the flat earth theory. But they're going to put you on a plane and they're going to show you it's true. So they put you on a plane. And they fly you to the end of the earth. You what? Land, there is a wall of ice. It's the end. It's real. Everything, like, so you're standing there, like, in disbelief. Meanwhile, everybody that brought you gets gunned down and just hail of gunfire. Everybody's murdered. And you're standing there alive. And you're kidnapped. You wake up in a room and this guy is asking you questions and you're sure
like a government agent.
Yeah. Like a man in black. You're sure you're about to die. Like, and he tells you that everything, you know, is not what you know. And everything you just saw isn't really real, because here's the way the world works. The more that people believe in something, the more real it becomes.
What? Wait. So what you're saying is that the concept is that the reality is actually based on a hive mind of reality. So like
100%. The more
people holy shit, so that's a more great people concept.
That believe in something, the more real it becomes.
Here's the kicker. Wow.
The people tasked with controlling and trying to cage this from getting out of control, that's the Department of Truth. And the guy that's leading the Department of Truth, who you, this place you've just been recruited into, your new boss is Lee Harvey Oswald.
Are you fucking kidding? So it takes place in the 60s?
No, it takes place in modern day.
Oh, shit. Lee Harvey. Okay, I have some questions, but you've kind of made it so that I so want to read this. Like, I mean, to like, I'm going,
there's like four trades out right now. Three or four. Yeah. It is the kind of thing where I cannot read it late at night. Because they get so into, like, they have tackled so many things, from like crazy shit like Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster to like the satanic panic of the 80s. And like, with this idea of like, the more people that believed in it, the more real it became. It is fucking awesome. Unnerving, man. Like, I cannot read this at night because. Or when before I go to bed, because my fucking brain will just like start running through these scenarios of like,
oh,
like
damn.
Is this real? I'm like, I can't do this, man. Like, it is fucking crazy. It is so good. And the art style is very much like the like Bill Sienkiewicz.
Yeah,
it's a lot like that. Like it's kind of scattered, like mixed media, and like it just it's not very traditional. So it is a fucking insane thing. Like there's like an issue on the I don't know if you are aware of the Denver airport like conspiracy. You should read up on that. It's fucking crazy. Like there's this whole thing of like it's secretly a like a monument to like some kind of secret society, whether it be like Satanists or the lizard people, or it's just fucking crazy, man. But like it takes real conspiracies. Like I knew about the Denver airport thing because I listened to a podcast on it once, and I was like, this is insane. And then like I looked a bunch of it up online, and I was like, holy shit, like this is true. Like there's this big like statue of this like bull or something that like somehow fell and killed the dude that was making it. So like the statue's cursed and like just all this crazy shit. So it might not be a bull. It might be a horse. They call it Blue. Anyway, it's nuts. Like the layout of the airport doesn't make any sense. There's all these like weird murals all over the place. And like, that's just one thing. Like I said, there's Bigfoot. There's anything you can think of that has some kind of conspiracy surrounding it, but like it just it falls so into place with like the QAnon stuff that I'm just like, wait, what the fuck is real and what isn't real? Like I'm it blurs so much. You've got to check it out, man.
The first trade paperback on Amazon right now is only $8.79, so it's ordered it.
So worth it.
I'm looking forward to this. Like just look, like you giving me the description and then the art style issue. Because I love that.
I can't even that's not even the first buildup. That's the first fucking issue, and I'm like, wait, what?
That is and now kind of just looking online, the more I see about it, like this is kind of crazy. Some of the stuff that they're both tackling, like, and that's awesome. Like that's awesome.
It is the closest thing to like the X-Files in comic book form. Like I know there are X-Files comics, but it just didn't have the same hit that show had, you know, to kind of make you question things like, wait, is this all a conspiracy?
Shit. Actually, this kind of like what we were just talking about with Joe Hill and Stephen King, this is like kind of like right in that same wheelhouse. This feels like Chris Carter and Vince Gillian, fans of the X-Files going, we need to do something like X-Files, but we need to do something different, and just kind of taking the reality of what we're dealing with in today's society and kind of flipping the script and making it like X-Files. That's awesome. Like I'm totally, totally down for this. So like I said, I just ordered it. So I will report back once I have ingested it.
Yeah. I might have to go back and reread that first trade. Cause it's been about, maybe about a year since I started reading it. So,
okay. That's great. I always love getting new recs for comic books. I mean, like it's just because there's so much out there. Like I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it, Logan. Like how you're able to like discern from everything and get some of the primo stuff and just kind of go, hey, by the way, this is what I want to recommend to you, because it's just so much out there now.
It's sheer fucking luck. Like it really is. I mean, because occasionally I will read stuff, and after like one or two issues, I'm just like, yeah, that's not for me. This I picked up. I went to my local comic book store, and I stopped in to get like what he had been holding for me, which I actually only wound up being like three things. And I always feel really bad when I walk in. I'm like, oh, well, you're going to run my debit card for like $7 or $12 or whatever. Like, cause I know he gets charged like such a ridiculous fee for running cards.
Yep.
So I'm like, shit, I can't, you know, like I'm here to pick it up, but I don't want to just buy $12 worth of stuff. So I'll usually just take a look at his trade rack and just be like, what looks interesting. And I picked up the Department of Truth and I saw James Tynion's name, and I've read a lot of James Tynion stuff and I like him. He's written Batman. I don't like his
superhero. That's what I was going to say. Like, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
So a lot of people do, but I've not been a fan of any of his superhero stuff, but his, I can't think of the name of the book off the top of my head, but one thing he wrote I was like really, really into several years ago, and I was like, I haven't read any James Tynion in a while, and so I was like, well, I'll pick this up, and like fucking the first issue I was just like, holy shit, like, this is insane.
That's like bold. Like you can almost like it sounds like this is something that he's been thinking about for years. Like, you know, like
that was the book. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, this is the book for him. Like, this is like, it, like, I love it when a creative gets that chance, but the idea is good. Cause so often, like, people have these big ideas, but they're so big and they thought about it for so long, they've not thought about a story or a through line, and it just becomes this jumbled mess. Very rarely, on the rare occasion that we get something like this, it's like bingo, right?
Yeah, like, you know, what Carlton Cuse and his cohort did over on fucking Lost.
Lost, yeah, seriously. Seriously. When the end of the story is basically what you told you fucking lied to everybody about. You say, oh no, they're not in purgatory. Fuck you, come on. Come on. Though, I will say, Lindelof in the last, like, say 3 years or so has kind of, like, his Watchmen. I mean, we've never even talked about it. It was great. Like, and he managed to make something that was so, like, my favorite part about this is, and I'm fairly certain that there was a part of Alan Moore that got super pissed that they changed his story so defiantly. And I kind of love that. Because anytime you can piss off a perv like Alan Moore, I'm all for it. All for it.
And, you know, I heard good things about The Leftovers, but I just never... I watched most of the first season, and I just never went back to it.
It's devastating. It's basically what Lost should have been, but because of network TV and buzz of fandom, like, it never could be what this is. I mean, it's rough. Like that last season is like, it's not rough. It's rough emotionally because it's just so effective with the writing. So like, but yeah, like, Lost. don't even get me started on JJ. Oh, you, you and I have talked about him, and you know, we get ahead of steam, and it won't be pleasant. Are you reading more comics? Anything anything else that's exciting?
Still just the X-Men stuff, which I have an interesting theory about mutants in the Marvel Cinematic Universe after getting a little more into this Avengers X-Men Eternals thing. Mm-hmm. So we talked a little bit about it and how like the Eternals, they're tasked with like eliminating deviants, and now they're looking as mutants as deviants.
Deviants,
because they have figured out how to regenerate or, you know, stay alive, you know, whatever. And so it got me thinking that, I wonder if this is how they're going to do the mutants in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that we're going to find out that, like, those deviants are, like, that's the line. Like, that's how we get to the mutants, you know?
Interesting. Like, okay, so, like, what's your thing? That the deviants are mutants and had, like, are, like, did they somehow inject their DNA into the human bloodstream, so to speak, and begin mutations, or were they like literally like crossbreeding? Like they came, the deviants came birth just like the Eternals did. Instead, they continued to like stay in the shadows and just have relationships with things and continue to like children, and then they.
I don't know, because the deviants we've seen in the MCU were basically just like feral animals. Creatures. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Exactly. No. Like, absolutely. But on the, in the comic side, are like, anything in
the comics, MCU, deviants are anything. Like, they're all kinds of creatures. Like, the deviant thing is not a, it's these like dog looking creatures or whatever. They're just anything can be a deviant, so to speak.
It's deviating from the normal name of whatever animal it is. Okay, that actually is kind of like, now that kind of makes, that's cool, because deviant is kind of like just the word for mutation, right? Like deviating and mutants, it's just like kind of like that's an interesting way of like kind of coalescing everything together. They're going to use that concept from the comic world and bring it into the cinematic, because that would be awesome. Like,
yeah,
a way of like kind of resetting so that we're not seeing like Feist told over again, because like that's my fear. I don't know about you, but my biggest fear is that you bring them in and we're literally going to get the same fucking five stories that the X-Men play over and over again. And
yeah, like, I don't want to fucking see the Dark Phoenix saga again. It's funny you bring that up, because I mentioned Harley Quinn, and I guess kind of semi-spoilers for this week's episode, but it's called Batman Begins Forever. All right, so for reasons that I won't even get into, they have to go into Bruce Wayne's head. Very Inception-like. Like, they have to go in and find a memory. Well, they psychically go into his head, and the problem is all of his fucking memories are just of his parents dying. Like, just his parents getting murdered. Every memory is his parents getting murdered. And I actually was just telling Spencer, I said, this show has become the BoJack Horseman of the superhero version of BoJack Horseman, because it's on two fronts. You have, like, talking about storylines that we've done ad nauseum. These characters are commenting on the fact that, like, because they keep having to watch his parents get murdered. Like, they're like, how many fucking times do we have to see these two people get shot? And I'm just like, yeah, exactly. As an audience, how many fucking times have we had to watch these two people die? But then it's also doing this, like, talked about the generational trauma thing, like childhood and generational trauma, like that's what creates Batman. And so it's like also doing that work too. So I like how things like that can work on two fronts. Like, you get that origin story, like, not that a show like Harley Quinn's needs a Batman origin story, but you get to revisit it without, you know, doing it like beat for beat again, you know. And we don't, none of us need that. Like, if anything, Spider-Man, which I'm going to see Noah Helm again today.
With you're gonna see the extended version?
Yeah. So I'll report back on that next week.
Yes.
I mean, that series of films prove that we do not need to see fucking Uncle Ben die again. We just don't need to. Like, it's okay. We know the story. You don't have to show it to us. So yeah, I'm with you. Like, and I hope Kevin Feige gets that. Like, that, like, we need to see mutant origins that we haven't seen before. We don't need to see, like, we don't need to see Wolverine's origin. If you're gonna bring Wolverine in, we don't need to see the Dark Phoenix saga. We don't need to see any of that. So give us something new. So.
Yeah, like, literally, we don't need the same 20 mutant characters we've seen ad nauseum for the last you know, 22 years, it's time to put them to bed and give them more stuff. Like, you know, part of like I love about Deadpool and Deadpool 2 is that they literally, you know, Deadpool 2 makes a joke of it with X, but I mean, literally, at least we got to see just different characters, right? Like, we got to see, like, characters that weren't just the same fucking, like, it, well, I mean, like, their use of Colossus. Colossus is not even used in X-Men movies. I mean, he is, but he isn't. I mean, he's like a visual gag, right? Yeah. But in the movie, he's like my favorite part about that. He is the moral center of the Deadpool movies. It's like hilarious, right? A Tin Man, like the Tin Man with no heart, actually has a heart. And I really do hope, like that's my honest hope, is that, like, you know, the Kevin Feige. I mean, we've talked about it. We talked about ad nauseum that he's probably, you know, he's already understood that he understands the assignment, and it's going to happen the way that we think it's going to happen. It's not going to be like a traditional X-Men movie, because he's giving us X-Men with the animated series, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, X-Men 90 is like literally, it's like, you know, you don't care about, like, if we really think about it, it's kind of genius, because he's like, you don't really care about the X-Men. You don't care about that stuff. Like, the director, who now not be named on this podcast because fuck him, who made all of those movies. No, we don't care about those. You really just care about the animated, because you were all kids and you all loved it. I mean, hell, we loved it, right? I mean, like, in an era when we couldn't get anything like live action, was like blood. I kind of hope that this is his way of being, guys, I love you. I love the X-Men just as much as you do. We're going to spend, like, you know, as much time as we need to give you this. But in the Matic universe, it's not going to happen, at least not for a while. You're not going to get another Wolverine. We may get Wolverine in Secret Wars. I mean, not Secret Wars. Is it Secret Wars?
Yeah. The one they're building up to is Secret Wars, yeah.
Well, yeah, Secret Wars. I always forget it, like, because they're Secret Invasion and they're Secret Wars. I always forget Secret Wars is the battle, and Invasion is with the Kree.
The Skrulls. Yeah.
The Skrulls. It's the Skrull War. They really should not call it Secret. I mean, I understand why they call it Secret Invasion, which is kind of funny. It's like, we're like, okay, so can I ask something? You've watched the newest She-Hulk, right?
Yeah.
So I was a bit bounded, because is that shapeshifter
not a Skrull?
A Skrull?
A light elf. So we're using magic to shapeshift.
Okay, different than a Skrull who actually can just change without that's just part of their. Okay.
They don't really get into enough of, like, and they don't have a lot of time to get into it either, but, like, it would be very, very easy to confuse them. Like, they do make a point of saying it's a light elf, but, like, not telling you what the hell a light elf is.
It's like literally, like, they're kind of teasing and playing with that concept, because, I mean, the concept of Secret Invasion, which we're getting a TV series, which I'm, like, I'm still trying to wrap around that we're going to actually get a show of that. Like, we're going to get a big epic thing, right? Like, something that I read when I was a kid, we're going to get this thing, and it's just like, wow, like, that's awesome. Like, just living in a time where, you know, where we didn't have it, and now we do, like, the appreciation of that is, for me, I'm pretty sure for you too, is like, all these things we have, like, we're going to have a Secret Wars, we're like, superheroes in big box. I mean, of course, it's probably going to be different, but, and we're going to have them face off. That's, like, that's the stuff that I dreamed as a kid, and now we're going to have to get it. Okay. Huh.
Yeah, it's, you know, I get the superhero fatigue. I do.
Yeah.
But for stuff like that, like, I'm still super excited. And I mean, honestly, hell, by the time we record next week, we might be just talking about D23, talking about there's no news this week. Like, next week, it might just be us talking about what the fuck happened at D23 all afternoon.
Because
it's because we know that there's 6 days, I think, right? Yeah.
Yep. Yep. So. It starts on, yeah, the 9th on Friday. Friday the 9th.
But yeah, that stuff I still get excited for, and honestly, like, I'm sure I'll talk about this on the She-Hulk podcast. Anybody who's bashing that show, talking about how it's such low stakes, like, go back and watch the first Iron Man movie. That it's not about saving the fucking world; it's about saving his company. Like,
literally. Just like saving, like, it's so low stakes, but what, let's be honest, like, it's kind of refreshing to see it, like, something, everything that's come up recently always has been a little bit different, right? And it's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Like, we talk about super fatigue. I don't want to see, like, I'm fucking sick of seeing building being destroyed and
That's what causes the superhero fatigue. Like, that's the... Yeah, exactly. I mean, it happened with the Western genre, right? And that's because every fucking movie was the same. Like, my dad watches those still. Like, he loves Westerns. Mm-hmm. He watches Roy Rogers. And if you watch one, well, fuck, you've seen them all, man. Like, there's so few that are different. And that's why the ones that are different still stand out. That's why things like The Magnificent Seven, even though it's based on another thing, that's why it stands out. That's why The Wild Bunch stands out. It's why the Man with No Name movies stand out, because they're different, you know? And the problem was they were making so much that was the same thing over and over and over and over that people were just like, we're kind of done with this. And they have not been careful enough, and that is what is happening to the superhero movies, you know. And we might be 25 years from now, well, I mean, who knows where we'll be, but 25 years from now, people might be looking back on it being like, remember when they just made superhero movies like all the fucking time? But how good was fucking Infinity War? You know, like,
How good was Tom Holland as Superman?
Yeah.
Like, you know, then there was the movie where he got to meet all Spider-Man, and it's like, yeah, like, there are always, like, there's the random outliers, and it's like, but I'm glad that, like, as we're talking about this, we can also appreciate that I'm comforted by that Kevin Feige knows this, too. We both know that he knows this.
Yeah.
He knows that, like, as per the release schedule and what we're getting over the next couple of years. Like, you know, it's like, yeah, no, don't worry about it. Like, we're going in a different direction. We're going to have the big, but we're also going to do small stakes. We're also going to do human scale stuff, because that's like the biggest disappointment for me in everything in this, like, She-Hulk stuff is everybody, all these fucking idiots. And I will call you guys fucking idiots, wanting to know when the fuck Raging Hulk is going to come back. Why did we turn Hulk into a simp? Fuck you. I'm sorry, but you know what? Bruce, like the Hulk, just like any other character, is allowed to evolve. And like,
he's done it in the comics. Like, I think we've talked about this. Like, it happened in the comics. He's evolved, devolved, changed, split. Like, there's been so many. That's the thing about these characters, is that, like, and I get it. It works better in the comics because you have huge runs that you can just go, like, well, this is the Hulk I like, so this is what I read.
Yeah.
And not, you know, not so much in the movies, because, but I mean, you got your Incredible Hulk movie, man. Like, that was the movie you got. Like, I don't know. A lot of people like it. I think it's just okay. But it's there, man. Like, you can go watch that movie. Like,
or you can watch The Avengers. You can watch Age of Ultron. You can watch...
Age of Ultron is very, like, Hulk rage. So...
Yeah.
They have
a whole entire scene set in Wakanda. Come on. Like...
There's plenty of that, like
yeah.
You know, and yeah. So the outrage is just a little fucking ridiculous, and most of the people I talk to love the show. Like everybody yeah. I've recommended it to has loved it. So
it's, you know, it's so delightful. Like it really is delightful. And you guys are kind of doing a great job talking about it. Like I kind of like I'm loving the podcast. So no, absolutely. Like literally I don't talk about it because you guys cover all, like we talked about it once and we covered all, like you guys cover all the bases. So like I'm happy. Like I don't need to talk about, I don't need to talk about She-Hulk. Like, you know, cause you guys do such an elegant job of encompassing everything and talking about that show. So
I'm all good. I've fallen back in love with Tatiana Maslany, and when She-Hulk is over, I'm going to be
in love with her.
No, but I went from, like, when Orphan Black ended, like she showed up in Parks and Rec and that was fine. And yeah. like, I didn't really follow. Like, I know she did a few movies, but I just kind of like stopped following her career. So like it was like kind of just losing touch with somebody that, you know, you had a major crush on or something. And then like she yeah. shows back up and you're just like, holy shit, I forgot how much I love you. And then literally like I have to go back and watch, like when this is done, I can't go a year and a half or whatever before the next iteration of She-Hulk and waiting to see more of her. I'm going to fucking watch the Perry Mason show on HBO Max. So I'm saving it for when She-Hulk is done so that I then have something, you know, to go watch with her in it.
The whole so that's great. I will say, like, the final moment between her and Megan Thee Stallion, like, twerking,
so good.
was one of the best moments. Like, and especially if you realize, because I didn't realize until this year that Megan Thee Stallion is 5'10".
Yeah.
She is tall.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, it made it even funnier that somebody, like, that she, like, that she's, like, you know, She-Hulk is even bigger than her. And it's just smart. Like, the show is just smart and it's delightful. And it's like, you know, her final words to Megan Thee Stallion, I will kill for you. And then it just ends. It's like,
that's it was fucking so perfect. Funny, man. So funny.
It was. And it just like the look, like it was the CGI. Like, I finally am not bothered by the CGI. I think this episode was the one where I was like, especially when her interactions and stuff, I was like, yeah, this it's fine. It's fine. I'm not worried about it now. But with that, I mean, I've got nothing else. I've been stuck in work hell, so I've not been watching a lot or reading a lot or anything other than
no House of the Dragon.
You know, not yet, sir. I'm actually gonna listen to your. It's supposed to be this weekend. Like it's supposed to be that with the $1 billion Bezos show that we know is Lord of the Rings: Rings of Power.
I haven't dove into that yet. I'm not the biggest Lord of the Rings guy. I wasn't the biggest Game of Thrones guy either, but I watched the show, so like I feel semi-invested. The Lord of the Rings movies, I did watch all the movies, but I was never like, I know people that live and die by those books and movies.
Yeah,
much like no, Potter, they do. And I'm just like, I mean I do love the Potter movies, but the books I'm like, it's whatever. So I want to watch it, but I also just like, I still haven't watched any of Sandman. Like I have so much other stuff that I have not watched that I actually have like some kind of like attachment to that, like investing in Lord of the Rings when I'm just like, I don't really care. Seems like not a good idea. So although my cousin Elizabeth, who podcasts with me about Game of Thrones, she is fully into it. So I would imagine it's going to come up while we talk about Game of Thrones because she's going to want to talk about Lord of the Rings. So,
okay. Well,
so I might watch it just to talk with her about it. So,
well, hopefully by the end of this weekend, this long weekend, I'll watch that, House of the Dragon, because my wife is going to probably murk me. Like, she's going to pull her own red wedding if we don't watch it this weekend. And also, I'm probably going to watch oh, Lord, film gods be with me. I'm going to watch that fucking Elvis movie.
It's on HBO.
Yes, and that's the only reason why I'm going to watch it. I'm going to make it into a miniseries.
All the fucking stuff they've pulled off of HBO, but hell, we can watch Elvis.
Yeah.
I've heard good things, but, like, at the same time, like, I don't know. Like, I get conflicted about this stuff because I'm like, we know he wasn't really a good dude. Like, there's no denying the talent. Like, John Lennon. Like, when you get to the root of it, like, you know, the dude didn't really practice what he was preaching. And, like, it's hard to, it gets more difficult the older I get to just separate from all that. I can listen to the music just fine. I just don't want to see some, like, bullshit glamorized story of his life when I'm like, all the stuff when he was younger, yeah, okay, but like the older he got, like, come on, dude. I mean, he was creeping on like 12-year-olds, like,
exactly,
you know. And I know you're not gonna get into that in the movie, so no. So I get why you're not. I don't know. I'm just like, I don't want to see some glamorized version of his life, you know.
I'm going to watch it, like, purely out of curiosity of the fat suits. Like, you know, I want to see the greasy Austin Butler fat suit, but I also, more than anything, I want to howl with laughter at Tom Hanks. I know that that's terrible, but it just looks so bad with his fat suit and his stupid accent narrating. Because you know he's going to narrate it as the Colonel. Yeah. You know? Like, you know, Forrest Gump 2.0, I'm there for it. I'll watch it in 30-minute increments and make it a 5-episode limited series from HBO. Because I think that's about all I'm going to be able to handle with that fucking, like, I mean, we all know Baz Luhrmann is like, he's like a guy with a megaphone 2 inches away from your head screaming. Yeah. Like, his maximalist approach to everything. Like, it's weird because
it worked when I was in high school, man. Like, yes. I was like, this Romeo and Juliet movie's fucking brilliant. Now I watch it. Now I'm just like, what the fuck is even happening? Like, he took something like so, like, simple and not pure, but just, it's just a very simple concept and made it so fucking loud. I watch it now and it makes me laugh. And I'm like, I don't think I'm supposed to be laughing at that opening scene with all of them, like at the gas station. Do you bite your thumb at me? Or do you bite my thumb, sir? I die laughing watching that now. But when I was like 16, I was like, this is art. I'm like, no, it's not, man. It's hysterical.
I mean, it's like you know, it's just like everything is so overheated. Like, in a weird way, I feel like eventually this is the way that Taika is going to go. Taika is going to eventually be like this kind of maximalist filmmaker. Like, he's always going to be on 11, and you're either going to be strapped in for the ride, or you're going to be like, nah, fuck that. I'm not here for it. I'm just majorly curious more than anything else why people are flipping their shit over a movie that I guarantee you he's going to have one scene sped up like he does in all of his movies. And just to see Fat Elvis, I'm pretty sure it's going to be Fat Elvis. Like, Fat Elvis sped up is going to be great. Like, I hope that there's a Dick Nixon cameo. I hope there's lots of cocaine, even though I know there's not going to be cocaine. I just, like, it just looks like so I told somebody, I think I told our fellow, like, you know, our fellow friend and former, film dispenser colleague, Scott Phillips, I told him, I'm like, it literally is, it's like they took Elvis's favorite food and made it into filmic form. They literally took a deep fried peanut butter banana sandwich and made it into a fucking movie. I mean, like, I've seen some of these things, like, he's hit, like, slow motion gyration, women, like, profusely sweating, falling down. I'm like, what the fuck is this? What universe? Like, I literally, my grandfather-in-law, Bill, love him to death. He's like the third grandfather I never had, and he's like great, and he loves Elvis. I literally want to show him this, but I'm afraid that he's going to watch 5 minutes of this and just literally get up out of his recliner and just look at me and go, fuck this. This is not Elvis.
I could definitely see that. Speaking of like just real quick, musical biopics, did you watch the trailer for Weird Al? The Al Yankovic story?
Are you fucking kidding me? Like that, like, so I have a theory because I'm going to Fantastic Fest, and they always have secret screenings there. And my hope, like I talked to Scott about this, my hope is that when we go there, that the secret screening is Weird Al followed by a mini concert by Weird Al. Like that would be awesome. Whoo, that would be like he's one of those guys. Like my brother-in-law, his name's Eric, and like, you know, he for his birthday recently, my sister got him tickets for Weird Al, and it was just like one of those moments where I was like, I want to see Weird Al.
Yeah,
I want to see Weird Al before like, you know, I'm 50 or something, because it's just like, I mean, we grew up with him, right? I'm UHF forever.
I'm excited that they took the approach of like, we're going to do a Weird Al movie and do it in a way that like, this is 100% not a true story. Like,
yes.
It is not even close to like how this man grew up, what he's like in real life. Like, none of it is remotely true. It is the perfect way to do it. Like, in a world where they are giving us these fake versions of musical biopics to glamorize people who are as flawed as we are. Like, it's just as simple as that, to take a dude who is fairly pure by like even Puritan standards. Like, the dude is so milky, like nothing, like he, and make him into this like just hard edged, like it's just perfect. It's perfect.
It's Dewey Cox, but based on a real character. Yes. Like, that's the whole thing. Is like, I kind of want to double feature Elvis with Dewey Cox, but I'm afraid that if I do that, I'm just going to be laughing the entire time that I watch Elvis.
The problem with Dewey Cox was it did everything that those movies do, and it did it so well that like you can't help, like you just see it now. Like I can't watch these movies anymore because I'm just like, they're all the fucking same. Like they're all the same.
They're all the same. Like it ruined, Dewey Cox ruined Walk the Line for me, and I loved Walk the Line. Like the wrong kid died. As soon as he said that shit, I was howling, and I was like, oh fuck, well there goes me ever watching Walk the Line again, because you know they managed to not only make fun of like that movie, but every single goddamn musical biopic that there was ever made,
and also do it better than those movies did it.
Yes. Like my favorite part, like one of my favorite parts is when they find Speed, and then they start playing the Dewey Cox song, the song, and they keep on going faster and faster, and it's literally like a commentary on all of those musical biopics like Walk the Line that took songs that were like reasonably slow and sped them up for kids to kind of relate to. And I was like, man, you guys are taking the piss out of everything. Mm-hmm. Like I look at that and I go, that's a work of genius, and no one went to see it in the theater. Like, do you remember? Like, it made no impact.
Yeah, nothing. And I didn't see it in the theater. I saw it when it hit home video, and I was just like, this is brilliant, man. Like, it's on a whole other level.
It really is. I just, oh God. So yeah, like if you guys are curious about what I'm going to be doing, I'll probably be mainlining Elvis and watching Dewey Cox, because, you know, Dewey Cox is great, and Elvis deserves that kind of lampooning.
I look forward to hearing about it. So
I will let you know.
I'll end with this. I finished Lego Skywalker. I am 100% complete. As of this morning, I got everything in the game and all the achievements from a gamer score. Everything. So
I bow to you, sir.
Fucking 3 months into this game playing. I mean, I only was only playing like 30, 45 minutes a day, but holy shit. Like, there's so much stuff in this game. So
there is. I'm at like 78 right now. And it's so hard. It's so hard.
Like, it did become tedious, but like it got to a point where I was like, I'm so time invested in this. I have to like finish it because,
yeah.
I don't know when I will ever want to go back to it because I've spent so much time in this world. So,
wait till they give us the Rebels DLC and the Mandalorian DLC and, Ahsoka.
I'll be there for it.
Exactly. So. I'll be there too. I'm counting down the minutes. I really want them to bring something out like that. Like I want more worlds because, as we know, there are more worlds out there. There are always more worlds. That's great. We both have talked about how much we love that game and how beautiful it is.
I'm going to finally, because I've been playing on my PlayStation, ignoring the OLED Switch that I bought forever ago. I'm going to finally, like, spend some quality time with my brand new OLED Switch. So okay. I'm sure I'll be talking about that next week.
No, absolutely. Like, I'm actually excited to hear about that. So. All right. Well, with that, where can people find you, Logan?
Go over to xwingfiles.com to check out all the other shows we're doing, currently podcasting, like Adam said, about She-Hulk and Game of Thrones. So if you're watching those, go check us out. Anything I'm writing is going up at the Movie Aisle, which is Adam's website. I'll let him plug it.
Yes, and you can read my work, Logan's work, and our colleague Marie's work on themovieaisle.com. Logan next week is actually talking. I'm going to actually talk to him about the movie that he covered. And I will give you a hint. It is one of the best comedy westerns written ever. And there are two specific people that we haven't talked about on this show that are near and dear to my heart that are currently on a TV show that we'll talk about next week because it'll be posted next week.
Are you current on that show?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I saw the cameo. We can
talk about it. Yeah.
Yes. Good deal.
We'll talk a lot. Well, I'm sure we'll have D23. We'll talk a lot about, I can't wait till next week.
Yes.
We'll see you guys then.
Comics, number 3 Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Kal-El, number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but they're really all sold out. See it all together if you're with me now. Nerd.